Welcome to episode 314 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on robotics and automation. If you'd like to catch the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
Automate me.
What are you asking here? What's happening?
I don't know.
I'm doing ancient robots, or at least old robots.
Oh, okay.
They mostly start in the first century AD.
Oh.
There's all sorts of rumors and stories about fabulous courts that had statues that would walk and talk and breathe fire and grand miracles and so forth. But, you know.
It's a guy in a suit.
Hey, I did bump into that Hungarian one.
Oh, did you?
1769, the fake chess-playing robot.
I see. Okay. Hungarian, huh? I had no idea.
Well, I'm not certain either. I just went, oh, that's the thing Phil talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So there's too many to list.
Oh,
so okay. We're going to hit a couple of highlights. But while we're at it, let's see if we can make something.
Okay. We're going to make something?
Oh, yeah. Okay, what's an automaton? Well, it's an automatic device that does some preset sequence of motions or operations without human intervention. It's a nice broad category, right? Like the washing machine, the dishwasher. Those are...
That's an
automaton. So is this music box we used to have.
Oh, yeah.
Now, a lot of them... Like, really, when you say automaton, I think, like, birds or lions or humans, even.
Mm-hmm.
At least looking like that, kind of.
Yeah, I got you.
So, here's your average music box.
Right.
And you open it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got some spinning chick on the...
Yeah.
So, it looks vaguely human. But the one I'm talking about was just a little rectangle, little block.
Mm-hmm.
And behind some kind of plastic or acrylic, it was transparent.
Yeah.
You could see all of its guts.
I loved it, yes.
And to my endearing joy, I discovered that you could take that plastic housing right off. And then it had, over in one corner, it had this thing that sort of poked up and spun like the Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just whirring away. And you could stop the whole mechanism by resting a finger lightly on that at any point. And then over in the bottom left corner was this drum.
Yeah.
That spun ever so slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That thing was hard to stop.
It was possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, if you managed to pull it backwards, it would wind it a bit. But that drum, that's a camshaft.
Oh, okay.
Or at least camshafts are usually narrower than that, but the idea is to have some spinny cylinder with bits poking out that do things.
Yeah.
Right. Like with a music box, they have a little row of tiny rods, longest on one side, shortest on the other. It's like a little keyboard.
Yes, indeed.
And then the little pokey things will bend the rod and then let it go all at once, and it will make the note.
Ding.
And if you put the pokey bits, the cams, on the drum correctly, you can get more than one harmony playing and chords and a bass line.
Mm-hmm. You ever heard one where the piano bit is, like, misaligned? You get all these sour notes.
No, but now I kind of want to. We got some sort of power source.
Okay.
Or maybe a local river.
Okay.
That spins the thing for us.
All right.
And we're going to use a horizontal shaft because I want to. Never mind all the gearing that might take, but we got a horizontal shaft.
Okay.
And it's got a cam on it.
Okay.
And on the side we're working on, it comes down.
Okay.
Rather than coming up from the bottom like it did on the music box.
Mm-hmm.
So now we got a hammer.
Okay.
And we're tired of swinging that thing. It's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So we fix it in place.
Okay.
And I put it on a little pivot so that part of its handle is poking past the pivot.
Okay.
So when you push down on that end, the other end swings up, the end with the head.
Mm-hmm.
So now we arrange it so that it's sitting by our spinning shaft.
Okay.
Which is spinning ever so slowly, but with just oh so much torque.
Mm-hmm.
And it hits the end of the hammer, swings it up, slips off, and the hammer comes down.
All right. And this is good for breaking eggs?
People, bones. Well, are we going to do a whole thing on metallurgy? So we'll talk about why you want an audit next time. See you then. I know.
Wait. Yeah, let me go. Thump. Okay. It's pretty simple.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, I know. I can do this stuff conceptually. I can't make it fit in like an actual building, let alone a music box.
You know the train, the old steam locomotive, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how that kind of worked off of a piston mm-hmm. driving a wheel?
Mm-hmm.
I saw the reverse, and they had the wheel that was hooked into the house power, and that was just spinning, and they were using the piston type action to drive a hammer. Speaking of metallurgy. It was just this homegrown, I'm tired of swinging a hammer
yep.
thing, yeah.
So you got a camshaft. That's one control mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the only one that has ever been thought of.
Oh, no.
We can go back to our hero, Heron.
Hey.
Back in the first century AD sometime, he made a programmable cart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got to stretch programmable a bit. And what'd you think of a music box? Doesn't that seem like a programmable device? Because you could switch in a different drum at any time and play a different tune?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that counts then.
Okay.
He made a cart,
mm-hmm.
and he was using this trick where you wind string around a cylinder,
mm-hmm.
and then you change directions and wind it in the other direction.
Okay.
And he may have used an extra spindle, too, because what he could do by how he wound it and the length of string,
mm-hmm.
all powered by a dropping weight, was get the cart to roll forward,
mm-hmm.
pause, and then roll backward.
Okay.
Well, you can program it, sure. And it couldn't go very far, programmed by a dropping weight, right?
Yeah, right.
Even he started using pneumatics,
mm-hmm.
Using compressed air to run machinery.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he used that along with dropping weights. He never got over that. For a 10-minute-long robotic play.
Ooh, interesting.
Yes, and actually, I cannot find out how big it was.
It's like
somebody
a flea circus
said
thing.
Mobile, which, yeah, that it might have been a flea circus thing. A bunch of little figurines that would come out, make their motions, do a little dance. Maybe some horns were playing. I don't know. Descriptions are lacking.
Hmm. Did he build it on top of the programmable cart, possibly? Just send it down the street.
One of the articles I read on his programmable cart said he did make it to bring automatons forward in the theater.
Oh.
And then they'd hop off the cart and the cart would go back.
This guy was a theater guy. Suddenly, all of his experimentation makes sense to me, you know? We're trying to make fantastical displays, you know?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's very limited programming. Very limited programming, very little control. We need something smarter than that.
Yes.
And you wonder how to do that.
I do.
Which we talked about. Here's my awkward segue on Monday. I actually was going to have an outline.
Yeah.
Because a little bit before you got here, I was thinking, okay, I know what I want to talk about. But it's not going to go smooth.
Right.
Unless I have a little map.
Right, right.
Right. So what I wrote down was, my stuff, their stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Well, I mean, stuff.
Stuff, my stuff. I've been reverse engineering the brain.
Yes.
Although I actually prefer to say reverse engineering the mind.
Well, out of curiosity, brain versus mind. I mean, what are your, what's
well,
the difference?
It occurs to me that it might be capable, it might be possible to construct a mind
mm-hmm.
without using neural networks.
Oh, okay. So a mind is the operatingness, the, operating system.
Which, you know, where do you think that lives in our heads, in our brains?
All over the place.
Somebody's like, hey, Brad, are you going to some sort of Cartesian theater? Yes. Yes, I am.
Don't understand. Cartesian.
Yeah, but where are the bits that actually mean that you're conscious of things?
Right. Generally, people say the big part, the squishy bit.
No, you're talking about the cerebral part.
Yes.
Parts of it, yes. Parts of it, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
There's a condition called blindsight, right?
Right.
Where parts of the visual system in that big squishy bit,
mm-hmm.
the occipital lobe, get damaged. And the patients can still sort of avoid obstacles and whatnot.
Yeah.
But they have no conscious perception of sight anymore.
Oh, I think you told me about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just found out today that a patient was born,
mm-hmm.
and it says had that kind of damage early in their life.
Oh, okay.
Right? There was a paywall, so all I got is the abstract. So I'm a little fuzzy on the details.
Mm.
But he did have some conscious vision.
Oh, okay. Didn't you say it was like they would show them the answers to questions or something like that? Or was that the experiment?
No.
They were trying to prove that they could still not exactly see, but that they could react. The info's
in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Remember.
I can't either. I mean, I've heard of experiment. I've heard of. Nah, hmm? Remember when I asked you to keep me from spinning off?
No, that's what I'm here for. What are you talking about? Let's go down some rabbit holes together. Okay, your stuff.
All right, so I've been looking at the thalamus lately, right?
Mm, yeah.
And the thing is, whenever I look at a brain region, I go, oh, maybe that's where our consciousness lives. Okay. The thalamus is a good candidate. It's mm-hmm. right there by the hippocampus, which is also a pretty reasonable candidate, or maybe them working together. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But all your sensory information goes there,
mm-hmm.
except for smell.
Oh, okay.
And if smell gets there, it's got to go indirectly. But whatever, smell's the odd man out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sort of maps.
Mm-hmm.
Like my favorite one is the sense of hearing.
Oh, okay.
In the cochlear nucleus part of it anyway, there's this ribbon or cord mm-hmm. of nerve fibers that go from the inner ear mm-hmm. reacting to different frequencies, and it goes over to that implant. And it's spatially organized, a sonotopic map, if you want.
Oh.
It's like a little keyboard.
That's neat.
And that organization gets preserved, or at least repeated, through mm-hmm. a whole bunch of brain areas, ends up in the thalamus.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other higher order bits that do other processing, and you get the same sort of representation, but abstracted.
Mm-hmm.
Not an exact match, but a case, if you will.
Okay, yeah.
Like, it's easier with vision,
mm-hmm.
which also does this thing. It goes to the thalamus, and then it goes to the higher brain regions to process more stuff, and then it comes right back to the thalamus.
Ah.
So you, in the thalamus, you got a map of what the retina actually saw. You got an abstraction of what the retina saw if it was holding still.
Okay. Yeah.
And you got things like, hey, that's a triangle. That's what color it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of this representational stuff. The tongue. I like the tongue.
Ooh.
There's a one-to-one correlation between taste bud activation and where they are on your tongue.
Really?
In your brain.
So you have a tongue in your brain, sort of, kind of.
No, you have a tongue in your brain.
Or a map of a tongue.
Excuse me. I'll map your tongue.
Interesting.
There was one more example. Cover vision. Oh, the homunculus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that weird nightmare-looking creature.
Mm-hmm.
You got a one-to-one correspondence with the nerves coming in from your body.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that it's a distorted image. It kind of looks like a person.
Yeah.
Except the feet are above the head for some reason.
Yeah.
The fingers and palms of the hand are huge, so are the lips, just because there's more nerves there. That homunculus actually gets passed around between a lot of different brain regions. It's actually hard to tell whether it looks exactly the same or not, because it ends up being mapped onto weird, crinkly, foldy bits.
Yeah. If I could just smooth this out, where's the iron for the brain?
Yeah, and again, there in the brain, you've got that one-to-one what's really happening, and also the, here's what kind of happens most of the time when we do this.
Okay.
Also, your prefrontal cortex.
Yeah, yeah.
This is one that a lot of people are like, that's where you are.
Exactly.
And certainly right. Damage to this sort of thing can leave you without a personality. It's involved in planning and organizing and goal-directed stuff and social awareness and language processing. It's a busy bee.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it goes to the thalamus.
So I'm seeing a trend.
Yeah. Yes. Here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
With all these mappings for different senses and so forth, what does a thought look like?
Ooh.
What is the map from the prefrontal cortex to which nucleus? What does that mean?
I wonder if you're talking to somebody and you're successfully communicating, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. Like we never do here.
Right. We're having a horrible time. Anyways,
I'm just trying to make you spin off.
If your brain patterns, I mean, because right, you're kind of just wiring as you go.
Mm-hmm.
But does a similar thought produce a similar brain pattern?
In different people?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. And with two quasi-normal adults?
Mm-hmm. And would it be different amongst, say, brothers?
Yes.
Versus, you know, complete strangers. But, you know, you have that moment where they say something and you're like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Hey, I bet you not.
I was actually betting against myself, too.
But I don't know. Hmm. This is a question I've been looking at lately with little to any answers. I saw like half a dozen relevant papers and half a dozen paywalls at $30 to $60 a pop. So
so their stuff is expensive, apparently.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So that's the brain bits.
Okay.
Right? And I may actually cut that bit out because it was long and confusing. I listened to it again, and I'm like, if you don't already know the brain, and even if you do, what Brad is saying makes no sense.
You could just add a reference the following episodes. We talked about the brain for a while.
For a while, yeah. I sort of assume everybody's heard the show for years now.
Of course.
Welcome back, both of you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about around the 3rd century AD, everybody switched over to hydraulics and pneumatics. That's using water and water pressure and pipes and whatnot for hydraulics and compressed gas for pneumatics.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a whole flipping episode on that crap. So,
okay.
I look forward to that. See you next time. No, again.
What was going on?
I'm tired of this episode.
Which way do I run?
We're going to fast forward to our boy Leonardo da Vinci.
Hey, okay.
In 1950, or somewhere in the 1950s, they discovered some drawings and notes he'd made that they hadn't seen before.
Ooh.
And actually, they were scattered all over the place.
Okay.
It's a description of his robotic knight.
Really?
Yeah, life-sized, human-shaped figure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm getting different accounts about what it could do. But stand, sit, raise and lower its visor, cross its arms across its chest, and maybe walk around.
Neat. Okay.
Yes.
So these are all drawings. Did it exist?
Well, there's a story about him showing it off at a banquet for the Duke of Milan time. According to one of the sites, according to his notes, he'd meant to use it as a machine for defense originally.
Oh.
Which is a tall order. How do you get that thing to... Anyway.
Yeah.
In 2002... some folk from NASA decided to take the drawings and see if they could reproduce this thing.
Ooh.
And yes.
Really?
Yes.
What a fun project.
In fact, one of the guys who worked on it says, yeah, I've been using what I learned from that project in other robots ever since.
You see, that's great. He didn't have any anybody else's work really to draw off of, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's too dang soon. He's making it up as he goes.
You're talking about Leonardo. Yeah.
And here's this guy years and years later going, that's just a great idea. That's how I should always do
it. I'm really impressed with the walking thing. It's really hard to get like a bipedal robot without a counterbalancing tail to just walk.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of videos. I forgot the name of the Dynamics. Somebody Dynamics. Okay.
Right. So another thing is I'm having trouble figuring out how he powered this.
Mm.
I look up power Leonardo's robot knight or mechanical knight or automaton knight, and they keep telling me it was powered by a system of pulleys and ropes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it was powered. That's how it worked. One thing casually mentioned by weights.
Oh, okay.
Falling inside of it. But like he did use springs, Leonardo da Vinci, like leaf springs on a catapult. That was one of his major improvements to it.
Oh, okay.
So he was aware of that. I wonder if they had helical springs, the corkscrew shape or not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're going to make a spring, you're really going to need some good metal.
Yeah, yeah.
So absolutely. How do you get good metal when you're starting with dirt and rocks and whatnot? Well, we're going to talk about that
Yeah.
next time. See you then.
Bye.